Welcome to Culturetopia, NPR's roundup of the week's very best arts and cultural stories. I am Neda Ulaby. This week on Culturetopia, a hip-hop performer from Minneapolis reaches back to the jazz-inflected poetry of Gil Scott-Heron for her beautifully reviewed new album. Then, choreographer and dancer Bill T. Jones on a song that captures the drama of winter and fuels one of his most vivid seasonal memories. But first...
Time now for music and a singer of a different stripe.
Oh, someone taught your walls to talk. But if they ask me, I ain't heard a thing.
This is Dessa, and clearly, this music is soulful, jazzy, as is every song on her new record. But it might surprise some listeners to learn that these songs started life as hip-hop.
There was a snowstorm in Jackson when you and I met at a club called St. Sebastian's. But the sign said something different. I remember thinking that I didn't have a shot at Mississippi television. Told us which roads they were closing. There goes a rap show.
That is the same song. Dessa's part of a hip-hop collective in Minnesota called Doomtree. And her latest album is a jazzier take on her past work. This one's called Castor the Twin. And Dessa joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Welcome.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
The album title, I want to ask you about that. Castor the Twin. This refers to the mythological twin brothers, I'm assuming, Castor and Pollux?
Castor and Pollux.
Castor is the kind of the milder, the mortal of the two.
Yeah, exactly. And I liked the idea of more human, tender, mortal take on what had been pretty aggressive songs. Pollux is said to have had metal hands, and he was this great warrior. And the producers who I work with in Doomtree are like my metal-handed friends. In making this new record, I thought I had songs that played really differently when they were performed live. So we have grand piano and mandolin and stuff that you probably associate more readily with kind of an orchestral vibe.
She's a Latter-day Saint, but she's a Saturday sinner. Suicide, Sunday desserts for weekends, drinking her dinner. The worry keeps her slender, the pills keep her awake. A man can make her happy, but he helps to still the shakes.
You studied philosophy. You have a degree in philosophy from the University of Minnesota. Could you have imagined that you would have become a hip-hop singer and performer?
I think I would have been really surprised. I didn't have like that childhood fascination with hip-hop. I stayed at home and studied a lot, so very often I heard my parents' music, and that was Michael Jackson and Whitney Houston. And then my father was a classical guitarist, so I heard him playing a lot, you know, on a nylon string acoustic guitar in the sewing room. And I think the kind of chords that were featured in the classical music that he was playing have shaped my tastes more than a lot of other musical influences.
The list of things I used to be is longer than the list of things I am. Ex-lover, ex-friend, excommunicated atheist, and an expatriate. Living in the heartland, living on the small chance. Like what saved the last dance for an underrated writer, overrated rapper, undecided major on an unrelated matter.
On the song Mineshaft, you refer to an underrated writer and an overrated rapper. Who are you talking about?
That would definitely be me. You know, when I started performing, I came from a background that had a real literary bent to it, and I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't know how to do that. Whereas it seemed like a much clearer path to success as a performer. You know, you work small clubs and then you work bigger clubs, right? And so in some ways when I started rapping, it's like I knew all these rappers who were so much better than me. And it felt like I was lucky enough to receive kind of that first surge of attention. Whereas I'd been working for years to try to become a really good writer, and I still wasn't sure how to like get any traction on that front. So that was an autobiographical little lament and moment of braggadocio, I guess, combined.
In that same song, you say, prose is as close as I've ever been to feeling like I've found it. In other rhymes, you're dropping the names of William Blake and Anna Karenina. It's amazing stuff. It's great, and lyrically, it's great. It's so different.
You know, one of the guys in Doomtree, when I started rapping, I played him a few of my first songs, and he kind of nodded along, and he said, okay. And we were sitting in a Ford Festiva in the parking lot of an old country buffet. And he said, why don't you just try to rap one of your essays? You know, why don't you just write hip hop like you write everything else? And he knew that I was shy, so he got out of the car and he hammered with his fists on the hood of the Festiva to create a beat. And he had me roll down the windows and then try to rap an essay. And that for me was one of those seesaw moments, you know, where I thought, oh, instead of trying to be like a rapper, I should just rap.
Now, I don't mean to be your mother, got my own kids to raise. And I don't aim to blow your cover, it's your own hell to pay. But the word on the street is a page out of Blake. Your man made money, but he made mistakes. And now the revelations come and looks to you for a break. You've always been cunning with those brave escapes.
Dessa, you, in a lot of your lyrics, I notice an absence of bad language, which is some, you know, I mean, for better or worse, is often a hallmark of hip-hop. And I wonder if that's something you do consciously, intentionally.
Sure. I think on my previous records, you know, I'm not totally blue. I'm not swearing up a storm, but there's definitely adult language. In fact, when I came in today, you know, I looked at myself in the rearview mirror and I was like, Dessa, no swearing. You know, we're doing a radio show and you're not allowed to use the language that you do with your friends. But there are definitely some words that I avoid. And when I work with other artists, I'll say as much, hey, I don't appear on songs that use the six-letter F word and the C word for women. And the N word, to be honest, but it's not a word I use. So I'm real conscientious about those, not necessarily because they're profane, but because I think they forward a really regressive worldview that I have no interest in participating in.
You've been getting a lot of attention for this record, articles and interviews, more than you've ever had in your career. Presumably it's good for you and you're happy with it, but I wonder, has it changed what you're able to do and who you're able to perform in front of?
The short answer is kinda, I guess. The longer answer is, you know, as a kid, I was really into, like, the gold stars in school. You know, I wanted A's. I was really into all that, those, like, sanctioned ways that we externally validate kids. You know, I dug that stuff. I wanted all of it. I think it would have really messed up my tender little head if I'd made a good record at 20. I think that I was spared that kind of, like, egomania that can come from praise early, because it was humble for so long, and I don't imagine that any of this lasts too long either. And after 10 years of trying, I feel like I've got a chance to try to make a meaningful contribution.
That's Dessa. Her latest album is called Castor the Twin. You can hear a few tracks at our website, nprmusic.org. Dessa, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks, Guy.
As cold weather descends on most of the country, we're asking for winter songs, songs that evoke the season and memories that come with them. So far in our series, we've heard some lighthearted or slightly wistful tunes. Well, this next song goes to a far icier place. It's the choice of the celebrated dancer and choreographer Bill T. Jones. His winter song comes from Winterreise, Winter Journey by Franz Schubert, the song cycle about a solitary traveler in a savage winter whose heart is frozen in grief. Bill T. Jones chose the last song in that song cycle, Der Leiermann, or The Hurdy-Gurdy Man.
Drüben hinterm Dorfe steht ein Leiermann.
For me, it's the musical arrangement underneath. It speaks about a bleak landscape. And this bleak landscape takes me back to a day when I was in fourth grade, out on the edge of town, looking out on a snow-covered highway, many, many yards away from my window. I should have been paying attention, but I was dreaming. And then I saw a lone figure walking across that on a very, very cold day. And you know how it is when the wind blows and you have to turn your back against the wind?
Oh, yeah.
And I felt so sorry for that person, and then I realized that person was my father. That my father, who was completely out of work, had been the director of his own business as a contractor in the heyday of the migrant stream back in the late 50s, but now that business had died, he was up in the chilly north with his family, broke, and sick, and he had to get to this very insignificant job in a factory miles and miles away, a black man with no car, trying to hitchhike, and no one picking him up, and he has to walk that 10 miles to get to the factory. And I'm sitting in this warm classroom, getting educated, not paying attention to the teacher, and suddenly feeling torn between two worlds. And this music, when I hear it, I feel for my father, and there's something about art that can be, yes, depressing, but helps us bear the pain through just sheer beauty and intensity.
Und mit starren Fingern dreht was kann.
I'm imagining that your impulse would have been to run out of that classroom and get your dad inside.
No, it was more complicated than that because that was my job, to be in school. One of the reasons I was in school was so that I did not have to be out there with him. And that was the painful thing about this sort of class climbing that we all in this country are subjected to. We're supposed to do better than our parents. And did I want the whole class to say, look, look out there, there's my father, impoverished, freezing, walking by the road? It was a very strange moment, Melissa, very strange. I was, in a way, paralyzed, doing what I should do and not knowing what I wanted to do.
Keiner mag ihn hören, keiner sieht ihn an.
Bill, did you ever tell your father that you had seen him that day?
Oh, wow. No, I never did. I thought it would have embarrassed him. Should I have? I wonder. I never did.
That must be such a painful memory to turn to when you hear this song.
Well, and that's what I say. I love the song because this is very much in the romantic spirit. This whole Winterreiser is in the feverish, depressed mind of a young man who has come unhinged because he's lost the one he loves. And he wanders ever deeper into this bleak wilderness with these thoughts of revenge and memories of happiness, and finally ends up listening in almost in madness to this organ grinder. And of course, the organ grinder is life itself and the passage of time.
Und die Hunde knurren den alten Mann.
The narrator of this song is listening to this hurdy-gurdy player. The player is barefoot, standing on the ice barefoot, staggering. And here's the killer part. No one is listening to him, not even the dogs.
However, the narrator is listening. Yeah. And has he so much disappeared that he is no one? Ah, yes. The young man is doomed, but it's sweet. It's haunting. It's delicious, almost like freezing to death. When we freeze to death, we go to sleep. Hmm. And this is at the end of that cycle, and I imagine that's what Schubert was trying to suggest. It's beautiful and painful, which is what I want from art.
Listening to this again after all those years, you're taken right back to that classroom and that image on the freezing snow?
That has been... It's taken on a greater weight over the years, because now more and more my body speaks to the body that I saw from a child's distance from a parent. I understand him inside and even outside now. I'm not afraid of aging, but the idea of what is success in life, what is a life well spent. His dreams were behind him at that point. Where are my dreams now? I love him so much for getting out there that day with no car and really not talking to us about it, not complaining, just facing it alone. I love him so much, but did I ever tell him I loved him? Probably not.
I bet you showed him. I bet you did.
He liked me. He liked me. Yes, he did. And that's so important. So important.
Well, Bill T. Jones, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you very much, Melissa.
That's a 1955 recording of Dietrich Fischer-Dieskau performing Der Leiermann from Schubert's Winterreise, the winter song choice of Bill T. Jones, co-founder of the Bill T. Jones Arnie Zane Dance Company and executive artistic director of New York Live Arts. His company premieres its latest work, Storytime, next month. And all winter, we'll be listening to winter song stories. We've loved receiving yours. And lest you think a musical memory of winter has to be as heavy as that story we just heard, well, Bill T. Jones suggested another, too.
You know, I did consider, I don't know if you remember, an old K-Star hit, The Sun is Shining, da-dee-da-da-da, but I can weather the storm. It's a little campy, a little offhanded.
What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm.
Please send us your winter song and a story or memory that goes with it at npr.org. Don't forget to put winter song in your subject line.
When your grandfather is a bootlegger and your family runs an illegal small-town roadhouse, you must have a lot of stories to tell. Cam Penner does, and he tells them in his music.
It's gonna get worse before it gets better. I wrote it down in a love letter, sang it for you. I know that love is the only redeemer. Everything else, just a make-believer. Everything else.
That's the opening track, Driftwood, off of Cam Penner's latest CD. It's called Gypsy Summer. And Cam Penner joins us now from the studios of the CBC in Calgary, Alberta. Thanks very much for being with us.
I'm enjoying it already.
Look, you're just on the surface of it. Any one paragraph description of your life is so fascinating. I almost have to take it phrase by phrase. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Okay, we already... Grandfather a bootlegger, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I read you grew up in a small Mennonite community in Manitoba.
True.
So I'm told you hit the road at 18, wound up in Chicago, right? Well, go ahead.
Absolutely. No, when I was 18, my friends were going down to Chicago to check out this Jesus hippie commune. And I thought, well, I can go to Chicago and catch a Cubs game at Wrigley Field, maybe catch some music. So I went down there with them. And I went down there for a year. And then I got to start working with homeless people there. So It was an amazing experience, and it kind of formed a direction for me.
Tell us about working in homeless shelters.
Well, the thing about it is it's raw honesty, which is sometimes the most beautiful thing. And I never saw it as working with the homeless. I thought it was just hanging out with these people who had something to say, and they lived it out. And it brought me direction to my life listening to these people. And I think that's what it was for me. You were listening, and you responded, and... It's like I have 10,000 stories inside me, and because I've met so many people that got these ghosts living inside me, and it, now it kind of it comes out in my songs and my lyric.
Let's listen to your almost title cut, Gypsy Woman.
Gypsy women with gypsy hearts, dark brown eyes. Tattooed arms, and you may find them in the taverns and the bars, with the long head down, shaking all around, getting lost.
How'd this song come into your mind and heart?
You know what? I got such a sweetheart of a woman. And she's great. And I started touring really hard about 6 years ago. And I said, Jenny, why don't you come back from London? She was out in the UK. And I said, we'll go on this tour, a six-month tour. So we toured 6 months across North America living in a van and playing shows and stealing from hotel buffets and sleeping at road stops. And it was fierce and it was great and it was romantic. And she's a gypsy like me, and I wanted to celebrate that. And part of it is an ode to my folks as well, who kind of live that way too, and with their roadhouses and with their dances.
Listen to a bit of another one of your songs, if we could, Flesh and Bone.
Row your boat to shore.
Don't you say it anymore. No need to start a war. Just go. Build yourself a home. You don't need to be alone. Not even on your own. And no, we're only flesh and bone. Just water through the stone. We came upon our own.
You always have to be awake to the world. You have to be mindful of it. And things happen out of compassion and love, the great things in life. And I wanted to express that in that song. And we're such a wayward group of people that, you know, just address things. And you do it out of goodness.
This is your fourth CD. But I gather it's the first that you produced on your own.
Yes, it is.
How does that change things?
You know, I spent so much time in my studio writing, you know. I was writing them. I had the ideas, and I wanted to make sure that happened. And when we went to record the album, we didn't rehearse the songs, and I didn't want them to be rehearsed. I wanted to get it live off the floor and do that. But I also had my own ideas, and, you know, I felt confident in my ability to direct and to allow things to happen naturally.
I am curious about this. CD lists songs 1 through 6 as being side A and 7 to 11 as side B. And I tried flipping it over.
Nothing there.
Because I believed in your song, so I believed in the instructions on the jacket cover, too. Right. Nothing there. Yeah.
No. I want it to be an album, and I don't want it to just be a collection of songs. It was an album to me. It was an experience, the way we recorded it, how those songs came to me that summer. And I believe in albums. I believe in a work of art, and it's a photo of that summer and spring and fall.
She got love in her bones, fire in her hips. She's shaking to the right, then to the left. I wander over to get to know her. Her lips taste like gin, her skin like summer. I'm feeling gold, I feel alive. I need your honey, wanna buzz around your hive. She looks and smiles, she's all I see. She turns around and backs off into me. Throw your hands up, let your dress fall.
This is quite a song. Clearly the product of a traveling man. Tell us about this.
Well, I rarely listen to the music that I play. I don't really listen to a lot of that. And I was listening to a lot of Al Green and Gladys Knight, a lot of soul music, but lots of underground hip-hop. And I didn't want to be afraid of throwing beats down on that album. And again, it's a celebration of hot summer nights, tequila, dancing on the porch, letting the floorboards creak.
We close our eyes shut. Start to drift off. Our dreams, they carry us into the night.
I gotta tell you, Mr. Penner, you're doing a lot for Mennonites by emphasizing the fun you have. One more song we'd like to listen to with you. Ghost Car.
Ghost car waiting on the side of the road, underneath the lights of the city's glow. Black tar rolling out for miles and miles, lead me up to the mountain land. Sugar pine, sugar pine. Oh, in the land of the brave and the home of the free.
You write a song every day?
Yeah, I think I do. Like, not necessarily that I write a song from start to end, but, you know, I got this great job when I'm back at home, and, you know, I'm a janitor, but it's kind of very meditative, and I do the left to right with the broom, with the mop. I'm thinking of things, and a beat's in my head, and my keys are dangling off my bell clip, and they're hitting my leg, and I'm finding a rhythm, and then I'm thinking about things that happen or that I see, and it's great. So you find things in that, and I'm always writing, I think.
Joining us from the CBC in Calgary, Cam Penner, his new album, Gypsy Summer. Thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.
And there's more of Cam Penner's new album to be found at nprmusic.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
That's it for this week. You can find links to all the stories we have today and subscribe to this podcast at npr.org/Culturetopia. Culturetopia is produced by Mike Katziff and executive produced by Sarah Saracen. I am Neda Ulibe. Thanks for listening to Culturetopia. So long. Now for miles and miles, lead me up to the mountain land of sugar pine. Sugar pine.